Hello, everyone. Podcasting from beautiful San Diego, this is the BD Biosciences Facts Matters podcast series. And I'm your host, Aaron Tishnick, an immunologist and a flow junkie. This show features casual conversations with researchers on the latest flow cytometry topics. Today, my guest is Dr. Mary Beth Sharkey. Mary Beth is Director of R&D Systems Technologies at BD Biosciences. She earned her PhD in organic chemistry from Emory and holds an impressive number of patents related to various technologies. Mary Beth is actively engaged in ISAC and has built a career embracing technology and solutions for standardization in cytometry. Most importantly, she is an incredible mentor. In this podcast, we'll chat about an area that Mary Beth has a strong passion for, small particles of biological interest. We'll try to hit on where there is a growing or why there is a growing interest in small particles, such as extracellular vesicles. What are the implications of their existence, and how do we study them? Welcome, Mary Beth.
Thank you, Aaron. It's great to be here. So I have a particular passion about extracellular vesicles, and a lot of that stems from my starting at BD and taking a look at a standard dot plot. And it always concerned me about all the garbage that was stuck to the y-axis to the far left. What could that be? And at the time, the knowledge that people had was, oh, well, you know, maybe you have a lot of platelets in that particular sample, or maybe there's some bacteria or there's other debris. But we just call this debris. And to me, that's a big aha, a little bit of a hook. At the time when I started, I wasn't ready to do anything with it. But I'm always a little bit skeptical when someone says something is junk, because in my experience, often the junk is that pivotal piece of interest that eventually comes to light as something that is of critical importance. And there have been a lot of people in the field of extracellular vesicles, and they've been working quite diligently for 10-plus years to figure out what's going on. And I think actually the first extracellular vesicles were identified 20, 30 years ago with people not knowing what to do with them. And at the time, there was a hypothesis put out that perhaps these little pieces of interest, if only we could get a hold of them and really understand and interrogate them, that they would hold some of the gold material that we're looking for. And maybe our junk is actually not junk, but the real deal. So when things come out like that in my area, they always capture my curiosity. What could it be? And in truth, our flow cytometers for cells are not really set up to be able to interrogate materials that are in the 40, 50, 60, 100 nanometer range, 200 nanometer range, etc. As I started reading the literature and seeing the potential that, geez, these EVs, they have content such as miRNA, that really ratchets up the excitement level. One of the struggles that we all know we have in human biology is, you know, we see the body respond to all kinds of complex, what would you call it, perturbations, whether it's coming from cancer, a virus, a bacterium. There's a full court press response, and we know a whole lot about aspects of that response. But what we've never been able to truly peel the onion on is the messaging system. For example, when we say we have a cancer come into being, what happened first to really get the tissue matrix prepared to receive that infantile cancer set of cells that then grow into something that's problematic? How do these things occur on a molecular level? We can track cells that go to the lymph nodes. We can see where they get into a cellular area, whether it's hormonally regulated or, you know, whatever the normal mechanism system. But exactly mechanistically, how does that happen has been somewhat elusive.
Well, you know, I mean, with that regard, like, what have been the major challenges? Because, you know, obviously, as you've mentioned, there's a there's been a growing interest in this, and it's probably some uncharted territory. In my studies, I've come across an unknown particle that was impacting the activation of natural killer T cells, and we probably narrowed it down to some extracellular vesicle. I know some of the challenges I faced, and so how do we overcome this, and where do you see it kind of going?
So, if you can't see, feel, touch, taste the particle of interest through established analytical methods, this is really, really a huge problem. And that's, in essence, where we have been with extracellular vesicles. So in your intro, you talked a little bit about my contributions in the area of standardization. So this was right in line with my primary interest, business interest for BD, was exactly that question. How can we look at EVs? How can we know what we're looking at? And how can we be confident that we're not confused? This has been actually a journey that I've taken with a number of outside collaborators trying to peel the onion to see how can we interrogate these particles. So, of course, because I'm into standardization, very interested in it, we've created a series of liposomes to be able to really accurately test the size, to see how big are the vesicles we're looking at. Can my instrument see the vesicles that I'm looking at? We use the liposomes as a model because they have a very similar refractive index to an EV. And we take a look at our technology and say, what do I have to do to my instrumentation to enable it to see particles this small when that was outside of its initial design? So early work, a lot of work was done using magnetic beads to capture these particles, but you can never get a pure population using magnetic beads only. So we've worked with our SORP department, and we've supplied some of these modifications to our collaborators, where we're able to adjust how our flow cytometer sorter works, as well as some of our analysis tools. So with using side scatter and, of course, fluorescent markers, we can actually see these particles of interest on a flow cytometer. And, yes, we can actually sort them as well. Once you hit that particular barrier and you get to that placement in time, then you are open to doing more exhaustive research with confidence. Now, why do I say with confidence? Well, when we first started, when people, researchers, first started working in this area, what's real and what's not? When I can barely see it and I don't have a great deal of confidence in these parameters. So having controls, the liposome controls particularly, are nice because they don't have the same charge, nor do they have the glycoproteins that you see on a natural EV. So I can use that not just to tell size, but I can see, oh, you said that there was DNA inside that EV. Is it really, or is it a hitchhiker? So by having a biological control, or it's not truly a biological control, I should say biological mimic, I'm able to sort through what is real and what is false in my sample. So
yeah,
with these, yes, go ahead.
Oh, that's one of the real challenges, right? Like you mentioned, what's real and what's not. And I often look at dot plots, and you see what we think of as my former PI used to call it schmutz, and it's the stuff that we didn't you just gate that out or whatever. And as a grad student that's impressionable, and I just say, oh, I want to hide that. And, I learned at a very early age that actually the most interesting stuff is the stuff that you're not actually looking for. And that's where, as you mentioned earlier, that's where the gold is, right? Like, and you need to be able to define parameters and ways to identify, is this gold or is there just all dust? And how do you kind of define that?
So I think you've encapsulated the critical area that has limited the use of EVs. It's taken us a long time to have confidence that we have the right tools, that we're truly looking at an EV and we're not being confused by swarm. We know how to properly dilute the sample. We understand when we look at the EV and we confirm all our studies with EM so that we can see the cellular structure, we can see the EV content, we can see the protein and glycoproteins on the surface of the EV, and this gives us a great deal of confidence in saying this is real. And of course, repeated experiments indicate that as well. And the curious thing for me is if something is real, then it shouldn't only apply to one paradigm. And so it's taken a while, right? But now we're seeing with EVs, they're expressing themselves ubiquitously in the human body, regardless of the trigger that's gotten the perturbation started in the first place. So you have EVs that are characteristic of health. You have EVs that are characteristic or enabling lack of health, promoting the introduction of cancer, promoting the introduction of viruses, having an impact in inflammatory cases. Now I can sit back and say, hey, you know, this is really cool. This is probably real. And
well, that kind of, I was going to say, that just opens up a completely new field of the way we look at things, where we, if you all of a sudden have the tools to identify these things, and there may be implied complex networks, that this opens itself up just through advancements of technologies. And, you know, I'm kind of curious, do you think that can lead to a new paradigm, the way we, you know, the way we evaluate blood, or, I mean, possible biomarkers, or what are your thoughts on that? What are those, what might this mean?
Yes to all of the above. So, interestingly, you know, I kind of went through a little brain fart a few weeks ago, and, you know, it's like, why am I not thinking viruses? I'm focusing on cancer because, you know, our bread and butter here at BD and our interest is primarily cancer. And once I had that epiphany, so to speak, I got into the literature and it's like, oh, my God, you know, I'm seeing the same expression in the viral world. Not surprisingly, once you start thinking in a more global way, that I have antiviral EVs. I have EVs from infected viral cells that are enabling the introduction of said virus into cells to ramp up the rate of viral infectivity. Geez, you know, this is really opening things up in a fairly grandiose way in terms of research potential, which for me I find personally exciting. As many people know, I'm getting closer to the end of my career than the beginning. So, you know, I'm kind of looking at this personally going, hey, dudes, we better get this together because I might need a therapy in the near future. And, you know, this is what might get you to be able to cure things that in the past all we could do is give adjunctive therapy to the patient. And, that's exciting.
Absolutely exciting. You know, I think you just touched on something a little bit there that you know, I'm well aware of, that you are maybe in the process of looking to take another a new adventure and step in your life, and you've made incredible contributions to the field of flow cytometry as well as your time at BD Biosciences. You've worked with a considerable number of customers, addressing complex problems and finding solutions, mentoring individuals who now are the emerging leaders in different aspects of science and BD Biosciences. And so, you know, I'm not sure if I'll get a chance to talk to you on this podcast situation again in the future, or maybe. And so I would just like to kind of end this on what has really been your proudest contribution in the field of, it could be just science in general, cytometry. Like, what is it that you've accomplished that you feel like, yes, I've done that?
Well, you started out by saying I'm an organic chemist. So I would have to say everything I love in flow is wonderful, but the coolest thing that I have done in my career is actually being able to take FK506, which is a very complicated drug that is used for to prevent organ rejection. And I was able to create an assay which required me to isolate a geometric isomer of that very complex structure and was able to demonstrate performance bias between the geometric isomers. And since that had, up at that time, never been done, to me that was something that was a feather in my cap to say, truly I didn't pick the wrong career. Because in many ways I'm a generalist, I'm a little bit of a magpie, and I find everything interesting. I run for the gold dust, I run for the flow cytometer, I'm interested in the dyes. But for me to say, put it to rest, I'm proud of my accomplishments. Although it wasn't in flow, that is my proudest accomplishment.
Wow, that's wonderful. Again, it's a great honor to have you on our podcast today. Thank you, Mary Beth.
Thank you very much, Aaron. This has been a pleasure.
If you are interested in learning more about flow cytometry or would like to speak to a flow cytometry expert, please visit bdbiosciences.com. Ciao.